Good morning. Welcome to the California Coastal Commission meeting for Friday, October 17th. Could we get a roll call, please?
Commissioner Ashajian.
Present.
Commissioner Burke.
Here.
Commissioner Wesel.
Here.
Commissioner Secord.
Present.
Commissioner Lieberman.
Here.
Commissioner Potter.
Here.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger.
Here.
Vice Chair Neely.
Here.
You have a call.
Thank you. Now let's go to staff and see if there are any changes to the agenda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are three changes to the agenda, including one more besides the two listed on the memo. First, on page 17, item 6A, which is appeal 07-053 Billings et al., that's postponed. Then on page 18, item 7A, which is the application of Pacific Gas and Electric, that's been moved to consent. And then finally, the change that's not on the memo is on page 19, item 9A, appeal number A4-STB-07-052, which is the HR 52 partnership project, has been postponed. And I'm just take this opportunity also to make a few announcements. If those in the audience wish to address the commission today, they'll need to fill out a speaker slip that can be found on the table at the entrance to the room. Please fill that out and give it to a staff member, and you'll be able to speak to the commission. The table also contains addenda for today's items and a binder with the previously published staff reports that you can look at if you wish. And finally, please turn off all your cell phones or put them in a mode that will not disrupt the meeting. We appreciate it. And then that brings us to item 2.5A on the addendum, which is the public education interagency agreement, and I believe Director Douglas may be presenting
that. I'll do that at the end. Can we trail that to the end, please?
You want to trail this to the end?
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that. Go ahead and start with item three then.
Okay, thank you. That's item three is the North Coast Deputy Director's Report, and there were several handouts that we distributed yesterday before the close of the meeting. If anybody didn't get them, I have extra packets available, but they include a pink addendum for the North Coast Deputy Director's Report containing four waivers. There's a green addendum containing three letters on three different items on the North Coast portion of the agenda. And then there's a staff addendum for item 7B, which is the application of the North Coast Regional Land Trust. The pink addendum, as I mentioned, has four waivers. We're not aware of any opposition to these items, and we'd recommend that the commission concur with the executive director's determinations that these applications are suitable for processing as waivers. And so through the chair, we'd ask whether there are any questions or objections to any of these items at this time.
All right. Thank you, staff. Are there any objections to concurrence with the executive director's recommendations on these? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
That brings us to item four, which is the consent calendar. And as I mentioned, there is one item that's been moved to the consent calendar, and that's item 7A, the permit application 1-06-003 of Pacific Gas and Electric. And for the benefit of anyone in the audience who might be here for that item, the item is being heard as part of the consent calendar, and the hearing will be limited to the issue of whether the item should be removed from the consent calendar. Should the commission determine not to approve it as part of the consent calendar, the item would revert to its original place on the agenda and have a full hearing on the merits. The application is for a coastal permit application for the proposed installation of erosion control measures to protect the structural integrity of an existing PG&E gas line that crosses under Gannon Slough. The project involves a 75-foot long grout-filled erosion control mattress and adjoining protection along the slough bank. Primary issue is whether it's consistent with Section 30233, we think, with the mitigation proposed and the conditions requiring mitigations, that it's the least environmentally damaging feasible alternative. And we're aware of no opposition to the item, and so we recommend that upon the close of the hearing that you approve it with the special conditions listed in the report.
Okay, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there are any ex parte on this item. Minor on file. Anyone else? Okay, what's the pleasure of the commission?
Move the consent calendar, Madam Chair.
Second. Moved by Commissioner Secord, seconded by Commissioner Ashajian to approve the consent calendar. Are there any objections to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the consent calendar is approved.
That brings us to item 5A, which is a de minimis LCP amendment of the Del Norte County LCP under the name of Hushnam. And as submitted, the amendment would amend the implementation plan for the Del Norte County LCP and change the current B combining district zoning designation as it affects five parcels in the area off of Pebble Beach Drive north of the city of Crescent City. The effect of the amendment would be to reduce the front yard setbacks for each of those parcels from 25 feet to 20 feet, and the side yard setback would be reduced from 12 and a half to 10 feet. The staff has determined that the proposed LCP amendment is de minimis, and we're reporting the determination to you today along with the comments we've received and are seeking your concurrence that the amendment is de minimis and should be deemed approved. The criteria for a de minimis amendment are that the LCP amendment would have no adverse impact on coastal resources and is consistent with the Coastal Act, that public notice has been provided by the local government at least 21 days prior to submitting the amendment, and the amendment would not change the use of land or water. And with regard to the last two criteria, the county did satisfy the notice. There is no change of use proposed. With regard to impacts on coastal resources, the setback change does not in any way increase density of the property. There's no ability to further divide the properties or change the floor area or the lot coverage requirement. The setback does not eliminate the need to still comply with other provisions of the LCP that would provide for setbacks from environmentally sensitive habitat area. And the proposal would not affect views at all because it's inland of the first public road and not within the view sheds. Now, we did receive a total of 8 different letters on this item, 7 of which are attached to the staff report, and there's one in the green addendum. They generally raise essentially 5 concerns. The most commonly raised concern is that the item derived from an after-the-fact situation. Two homes had been constructed where the second story overhung what had been the required setback, and this de minimis LCP amendment was proposed to resolve that. Now, our view is that whether or not it arose from a violation situation, the commission needs to look at the merits of the change, and we feel it's clearly consistent for the reasons I had mentioned. The only other concerns that are raised that are not addressed by the provisions I've already discussed have to do with whether the setback would affect the ability to negotiate the roadway for fire trucks, and it's hard to see that reducing the setback from 25 to 20 feet would really create a concern of that sort. And if there are particular situations where that does become a problem, when the county issues coastal development permits, they can take that into account and require some different site plan to deal with that. So as I've indicated, none of these concerns raised in the letters change our opinion that this should be processed as a de minimis LCP amendment. And the procedure for these is that if 3 or more commissioners object, the amendment would be set for public hearing at a later meeting. And if there are not 3 or more commissioners objecting, the amendment will be deemed approved and will become a certified part of the LCP 10 days after the action today. So through the chair, after any ex parte communications are disclosed, we'd ask whether there are any questions or objection to this de minimis amendment at this time.
All right. Thank you, staff. Any ex partes on this item? Item 5A? Okay. Seeing none, do 3 or more commissioners object? Seeing none, then the matter is approved.
I mentioned item 6A, the Billings appeal was postponed. So that brings us to item 6B, which is the appeal under the name of Jaeger. And this is an appeal brought by the Friends of Del Norte from a decision of Del Norte County to grant a permit with conditions to Nicholas Jaeger to construct an approximately 1,970 square foot single family home and an attached entertainment room and shop building at Humboldt Road, east of Crescent City in Del Norte County. The staff is recommending that the commission determine the appeal raises a substantial issue of conformance with the LCP. The principal contentions raised by the appellant have to do with inadequate delineation of the environmentally sensitive wetland habitat on the property and on adjoining properties that affect what sort of buffer should be provided for the residents to avoid impacts to wetland habitat. And we're recommending that you find substantial issue. We did a site visit and determined that there are areas on the adjacent property that are right next to the property line that appear to have wetland plants. And as the county's action did not take those into account, we think there is a substantial issue of whether the project conforms with the policies that provide for buffers from development in Esha. We further recommend that the commission continue the de novo portion of the hearing to enable the applicant to provide further wetland delineation and a setback analysis of these adjoining wetlands, as well as information regarding whether denial of the project would result in an unconstitutional taking of property for consideration as we prepare the de novo recommendation. Mr. Jaeger, the applicant, told me in a conversation this week he'd not be able to attend today, but he did submit a letter, which is contained in your packet, in which he urges the commission to deny the appeal by finding no substantial issue, pointing to the measures he has taken to, in his opinion, maximize the wetland buffer. So after the commission has been given the opportunity to declare any ex parte communications, we would ask through the chair whether there are three or more commissioners who wish to take testimony and vote on the substantial issue. If there are, then I'd present a more detailed presentation.
All right, let's start with ex partes. Do the commission members have any ex partes on this? None? Okay, then are there three or more commissioners who would like to, who object to the finding of substantial issue? If you could raise your hand, and then we can have a discussion. Okay, looks like we have one, two, three, four, five, six. So that means that we will have a discussion regarding the substantial issue. Did you have anything else you wanted to share with the commission at this time?
Well, I think the principal concern we have is that the wetland evaluation that was done of the property had not, as I mentioned, considered the wetlands on the adjoining property. It may be that after wetland delineation is done, they may determine that the 39 feet that's provided may be adequate setback, but they haven't really evaluated that. And if it's not adequate, then there may be possibilities of adjusting the project to provide for a bigger buffer. It may be that that there's not too much more that can be done, but there's some possibility that way. And with the additional information that we're asking be provided, if it turns out that this is an issue where a denial would result in a takings, we'd have the necessary finding information to be able to justify approval of the project on that basis. And so with that, I'll close my presentation.
All right, thank you, staff. I'll go to the commission. Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. Yeah, I looked this over pretty closely, and what I see here is a modest project that's located in an existing subdivision, a good faith effort on the part of the property owner. They've modified their project to reduce the size of the development. There's almost virtually no room for change. There's only 4 feet of the property on its northern boundary that would even be out of Esha, out of the Esha setback, 100-foot setback, under any circumstances. Certainly not enough area to modify a project and be in full compliance. And I think that if you read further, you'll see that within the setback itself, there's a dense, brushy vegetation. And not that this is a basis, but as I said, there are homes on all three sides and a road on the fourth side. And this setback is three times more than the setback to the property to the south. And although it was a limited biological assessment, there was an assessment done that by a qualified biologist suggesting that there appear to be no impacts on the rare or sensitive habitats in that area. And for that reason, I would be willing to make the motion.
Which you'll have to do in a minute, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. Commissioner Weissel?
And in looking at some of the conditions of the project, we see in terms of the 77-foot prescribed wetland buffer that's in the staff report, was that found to be not enough? There is a buffer that's prescribed in the local agency's approval that includes a tree buffer, an actual distance from the Esha a vegetation monitoring plan, a plan that prevents invasive species. All that seems to be like it's taken into consideration the requirements of the LCP.
If I might respond to the chair. The contention that we felt raised a substantial issue was more how it would not provide perhaps a sufficient buffer from wetlands on adjoining property, which had not been reviewed by the delineation. We did not raise an issue about the adequacy of the buffer for the wetlands within the property.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Commissioner Kinsey?
Thank you. In this particular instance, I would like to move that the commission determine that appeal number A1DNC08038 raises no substantial issues with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under section 30603 of the Coastal Act, and recommend a yes vote.
Which is
okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Kinsey, a second by Commissioner Secord. Passage of this motion would result in a finding of no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Well, I feel as though there has been a good faith effort made on the part of the applicant. It's been reviewed by the local jurisdiction. There was a biological assessment, and for those reasons, in an existing subdivision, I think that there's very little more that could be done, and therefore it would be no substantial issue.
Okay. Is there any other comments from commissioners? Can we do a roll call vote? Okay. Can we call the roll, please?
Commissioner Shajian?
Aye.
Commissioner Burke?
Yes.
Commissioner Waiso?
Yes.
Commissioner Secord?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
No.
Commissioner Potter?
Aye.
Commissioner Kinsey?
Yes.
Commissioner Schellenberger?
Yes.
Vice Chair Neely?
Yes. Okay, the motion passes 8-1, and no substantial issue was found on this item. All right, we move to the next item. Thank you.
The PG&E item was acted under the consent calendar, so that brings us to item 7B, which is the application of the North Coast Regional Land Trust to restore tidal hydrology and brackish marsh habitat across 23 to 29 acres of dike former tidelands and enhanced 4,500 square feet of juvenile salmonid freshwater rearing habitat along Wood Creek and Freshwater Slough, which is located on the north side of Myrtle Avenue, about 2 miles northeast of Eureka in Humboldt County. There is a staff addendum for this item that was distributed that makes certain changes to the staff recommendation, including changing the staff recommendation to now recommend approval of the applicant's request to reduce the application fees applicable to the project, and then also to change requirements of special condition number 4 with respect to the timing of when revegetation of the restoration area must occur, and I'll go over those changes in a minute. Staff is recommending approval with special conditions of the proposed project. The project is currently comprised of diked grazed seasonal wetlands. They're in an area that had been diked off from Freshwater Slough more than 100 years ago, and the project site occupied what had been the upper zone of tidal marshland surrounding the perimeter of Humboldt Bay and the tidal mudflats. The area also historically supported transitional brackish marsh habitat at the interface of the tidal flux and the freshwater coming in from Wood Creek. The project is funded in part by grants from Department of Fish and Game, NOAA Fisheries, Fish and Wildlife Service, Natural Resource Conservation Service, the Nature Conservancy, and the State Coastal Conservancy. The various project elements, as I indicated, add up to restoring brackish marsh habitat across 23 to 29 acres and providing juvenile salmonid summer rearing habitat along Wood Creek. The project would have significant overall habitat restoration benefits for a variety of marine resources. In doing so, the project would not result in any loss of overall wetland habitat area, and therefore the same amount of wetland would exist before and after, although it would be restored to brackish marsh and freshwater habitat for salmonids. We believe the The proposed enhancements are consistent with the definition of restoration and constitute filling and dredging for restoration purposes under Section 302.33A6. We also believe the restoration is consistent with the mandates of Sections 302.30 and 302.31 of the Coastal Act that marine resources and the biological productivity of coastal waters be maintained and enhanced. The primary issue raised by the project is the inconsistency of the project with the agricultural conversion policies of the Coastal Act. The project would cause the conversion of about 13.5 acres of non-prime seasonal agricultural land to the brackish marsh and salmonid habitat, which we believe is inconsistent with the provisions of Section 302.41 and 302.42 of the Coastal Act, which limit the conversion of ag land to certain narrow circumstances, generally in situations where the land to be converted is bordered by urban development and where agricultural values have been compromised by its proximity to urban development. However, notwithstanding the inconsistency with those policies, we believe the project should nonetheless be approved using the conflict resolution provisions of the Coastal Act. To not approve the project, we believe, would result in a failure to maintain and enhance marine resources and the biological productivity of coastal wetlands and waters in a manner inconsistent with the mandates of 302.30 and 302.31. And it's the very essence of the project, not an ancillary amenity of the project, that provides for the restoration and is directly consistent with those policies. We have looked at alternatives, including alternative sites, alternative configurations, and the no project alternative, and we believe that there's no less environmentally damaging feasible alternative to the development as condition that would be consistent with your ag policies. And so therefore we believe the project does present a true conflict between the ag conversion policies and the habitat restoration policies of the Coastal Act, and we believe that it is appropriate for the Commission to invoke the conflict resolution policies. And we believe that the impacts on coastal resources from not constructing the project would be more significant than the project's agricultural impacts. To ensure that the maintenance and enhancement of resources that's designed to be accomplished are actually achieved, we are recommending several special conditions. Special condition one is a monitoring condition that would provide for remediation if the goals of the project are not realized as hoped. The other conditions require measures to mitigate what are potential impacts of the project on water quality, impacts to the possibility of allowing invasive plants to invade the area, and providing for other measures to protect Lingby sedge and the tidewater goby, the salmonids, and the critical fish habitat within the project area. As I noted earlier, the addendum does make a change in the recommendation relative to special condition number four. The condition previously had required revegetation of the site within 60 days of completion of the grading for the project. To better conform with optimal growing seasons for the vegetation, we've changed that to recommend that the planting be done by the end of the first full planting season that occurs after completion of the grading, which is generally from March 1 to May 1. It allows the plants to become established before they hit into the drier summer or the erosive effects of winter runoff. We believe that as conditioned, the development is consistent with the Coastal Act. As I mentioned, there's one other change that we're recommending in the addendum. The Commission will need to act on a request by the applicant to reduce the permit application fee from $4,400 to $600. And the difference is that the $600 is the fee that would have applied prior to the fee increases that the Commission adopted. The applicant indicates that he had filled out his application before the fee increase went into effect, although we did receive it several days later. He had applied for the grant funds based on application fees being what he projected them to be, and without the relief on the fees, it may put the project in jeopardy. We now support reducing the fee as requested because the project would have significant overall habitat restoration benefits for a variety of marine resources and would achieve tidal marsh restoration, which is a particular value around Humboldt Bay, where at least 87% of the historic tidal marsh has been eliminated by diking and filling. In addition, we note the project is funded entirely with public funds from public agency grant funds, and we believe the applicant couldn't have anticipated the significant increase in the fee given the timing of when they applied. We believe that this combination of circumstances is not likely to reoccur, and therefore this isn't likely to have a cumulative effect on collection of application fees from other applicants. So with that, we are recommending that you adopt the staff recommendation on the merits of the project, which is found on page 7 of the staff report, and then with the for the reduction in fees, the revised motion is found in the addendum at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3. And that concludes my remarks, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, staff. We'll open the public hearing and see if there are any ex partes on this item. Mine are on file. Anyone else? Okay. Then Commissioner Schellenberger.
I move the commission approve coastal development permit number 1-08-012 pursuant to the staff recommendation and ask for a yes vote.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by, let me just state that there are no speakers on this item, so there was no need to have a hearing. Passage of the motion, we have a motion and a second, motion by Commissioner Schellenberger, seconded by Commissioner Ashajian. A passage of the motion will result in approval of the permit as condition and adoption of the resolution and findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes, only to say that I recognize that in this project that there is a legitimate conflict between ag conversion, our ag preservation policies, and coastal resource protection. And I think that this is a very good and wise application of the conflict resolution that's called for in the Coastal Act. So I commend staff and the project proponent, and I think it's a good project which will benefit the coastal resources in the area.
All right. Would you like to speak to the seconder's motion? No? All right. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the motion is approved. And therefore, the commission approves the coastal development permit for the proposed development and adopts the findings set forth in the staff report. Commissioner Schellenberger, would you like to?
I move that the commission direct the executive director to reduce the permit application fee for the coastal development permit number 1-08-012 from the $5,000 to from $5,000 to $600.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Schellenberger, a second by Commissioner Ashajian. Passage of this motion will result in the permit application fee being reduced. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes. As you all know, I generally do not support reducing a permit fees for a number of reasons, one of which is the Coastal Commission legitimately needs the money, and that they have been, when we established them, they're well-founded in that this is actually a legitimate amount for the fee. In this particular case, I think it's a unique situation. Both in terms of the timing of when this, 6 days after the fee went into, became effective that they finalized this. And given everything unique about this situation, I do support reducing the fees only in this case because it's so unique.
Commissioner Ashajian, would you like to address it? All right. We have a motion and a second. Are there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the motion is approved. The commission hereby approves the permit application fee reduction for coastal development permit number 1-08-012 to $600. All right, thank you, staff. Next item.
The next item is item 7C, which is the appeal under the name of Trask from Delnark County. This item is the de novo review of an appeal filed by the Friends of Del Norte and James Snow of a decision granted by Del Norte County to grant a permit with conditions to Adam and Tammy Trask for construction of a 3,424 square foot, two-story single family home at 700 Berry Street in the Pebble Beach area northwest of Crescent City. The green addendum contains one letter from the appellant that objects to the staff recommendation. The commission found that the appeal raised a substantial issue last October, and for purposes of the commission's de novo review. The applicant has subsequently submitted additional information providing analysis of existing vegetation and the effects of compliance with fire safe regulations on the wetland, or on the vegetation and the wetland and creek escha that exists on the property. The applicants have also revised the project description to slightly reduce the size of the project. And they've also included merging all six of the legal lots that comprise the property into a single separate parcel, thereby eliminating all wetland parcels that currently exist. The primary issue raised in the appeal concerned whether the project had been sited and designed to prevent significant impacts to the wetland habitat. There is a Class 2 drainage course and palustrine emergent wetlands that exist on the mostly northern half of the property. There is no riparian vegetation present, and the dominant vegetation surrounding the drainage is invasive English ivy along with Sitka spruce, cascara, salal, and sword fern. It does lie near the periphery of the Marhofer Creek wetland complex, which is a significant wetland in the area, however. A particular concern was whether the clearing would need to conform, that would be needed to conform to the fire safe regulations, would either encroach into the wetlands or reduce the effectiveness of the buffer. The analysis that the applicant provided since substantial issue was found has demonstrated that the removal of vegetation will mainly be limited to limbing trees up to 10 to 20 feet above ground level rather than completely removing trees. There should be little understory disturbance, and the analysis includes a very specific site plan that shows exactly what tree trimming and veg removal would be needed. And it demonstrates that the vegetation clearing does not need to go into this sensitive habitat, and that what is left should provide an effective buffer from the development and the wetland habitat that exists on the property. The analysis also provided information that the water course that's on the property is not a perennial stream. It often does not have water in it, and as a result, it doesn't support abundant wildlife or unique habitat functions. And with the change in slope and the dense vegetation between the project and the wetland area, the analysis demonstrated to our satisfaction that the reduced buffer, which is a 68-foot buffer, would be adequate to protect the wetland. And so we believe that the development with its 68-foot buffer and the various conditions in the staff report, which include a open space deed restriction over the buffer and wetland and limitations on the veg clearing that are consistent with the plan that had been submitted and various measures relating to protecting water quality and avoiding the introduction of invasive plant species, that the project as conditioned would be consistent with all applicable policies of the certified Del Norte County LCP. So therefore, we're recommending that the commission approved the project as conditioned by adopting the staff recommendation. Now, just a note on the letter that was received by the appellant. There were two main concerns. One is that they noted that the accessory structure that's proposed would be built on a slope, but the slope where it would be built is less than 20%, which is consistent with the LCP limitations on not building on slopes. And it would still provide for the 68-foot buffer that the analysis determined was sufficient. The second concern raised the possibility that there might be Sitka spruce sensitive habitat within what is characterized as the buffer. And although it's true that old growth Sitka spruce forests may qualify as environmentally sensitive plant community habitat, the Sitka spruce trees growing on the property are not old growth, but rather second growth. This area was logged in the past, and therefore staff does not believe the forested area qualifies as escha, and that the only escha on the property is the rather extensive wetland area in the northern part of the property. So we recommend that you find the development is consistent with the LCP and approve with the conditions in the staff recommendation. And the motion is found on pages 5 and 6.
All right. Thank you, staff. And let's start by opening the public hearing and asking if there are any ex parte communications with commissioners. And seeing none, then, we have no speakers on this, no speaker slips for this item. Commissioner Secord?
I move the commission approve coastal development permit number A-1-DNC-07-036, subject to conditions, and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Secord, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Passage of the motion will result in approval of the permit as condition and adoption of the findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, Madam Chair, thank you.
Commissioner Kinsey, no? Any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the Commission hereby approves a coastal development permit for the proposed development and adopts the findings set forth below on the grounds that the development as conditioned will be in conformity with the certified Delnert County local coastal plan. Thank you. And before we go to the next item, I think we might have a class with us today. All right, and could we welcome you to the podium? Would you like to introduce the class and tell us a little bit about why you're here? And
would you like a job? Didn't think I'd have to talk today. This is my class.
First, you have to give your name for the record.
Sure, Sean Anderson. I'm a professor at Cal State Channel Islands.
Oh, great.
And this is our coastal and marine resource management course that we teach every fall. And we usually bring them to various public hearings, and you guys are one of them. Last year was the LNG excitement. So it was
that was a
different dynamic last year.
But we're not going to be able to top that this time.
No apples flying or T-shirts flying. So these are my students, and we cover a range of topics broadly related to coastal marine management. And we've talked a bit about special districts and regionalism and all this and that, and so they're here to hear you guys do your stuff.
All right, well, welcome. We're very happy to have you in attendance, and we hope you'll attend many more meetings for local governments and state agencies like ourselves. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
And if you'd been here yesterday, you would have been with us at 10 o'clock last night when we adjourned.
Okay.
So that brings us to South Central. And I think Steve, Jack's back. No, Steve's going to do it. Steve Hudson will do this report. And then when Jack gets back, we'll do the district director's report.
You only have 2 minutes.
Okay, good morning, commissioners. The next item is 8A, which is the substantial issue hearing on an appeal of coastal development permit approved by the City of Santa Barbara for the construction of a new single-family residence. The applicant is Mike Silva. The appellants in this case are Ronald Green, Hitch Wilson, Michael Moore, and Don Santee, and are listed on the first page of the staff report.
These are the speakers.
The project, as approved by the city, is for a 5,390-square-foot, one-story, single-family residence with a 574-square-foot detached garage, swimming pool, a 35-square-foot detached bathroom adjacent to the pool, patio, septic system, walls, synthetic putting green, landscaping, and a 1,151 cubic yards grading. The project site is a vacant 1.34-acre lot located at 3455 Marina Drive in a developed neighborhood in the city of Santa Barbara, shown here in this first slide. The northern upslope portion of the lot has street frontage on Marina Drive, a cul-de-sac. The southern or downslope portion of the property fronts Cliff Drive, which is the first public road paralleling the sea. The subject parcel is located entirely landward of Cliff Drive. There is an addendum for this item, which includes a clarification that the public view corridor on the property required by the city is 30 feet in width, and attaching additional letters from two of the appellants and one additional opponent objecting to the staff recommendation. The standard of review at this stage of an appeal requires the commission to determine whether the appeal of the project as approved raises a substantial issue with respect to its conformity with the policies of the certified local coastal program for the area. In this case, the appellants assert that the approved project is not consistent with provisions of the certified LCP because, one, the project was not designed in a manner that would adequately protect scenic coastal areas and views of the ocean, and two, that the residence is not compatible with the neighborhood character due to its large size. Specifically, the appellants contend that the project is not consistent with Policy 5.3 of the LCP, which requires, in relevant part, that new development in and or adjacent to existing residential neighborhoods must be compatible in terms of scale, size, and design with the prevailing character of the established neighborhood, and with Policy 9.1, which requires that existing views to, from, and along the ocean and scenic coastal areas shall be protected, preserved, and enhanced. Policy 9.1 also lists potential ways that this might be accomplished, including the use of view corridors or the use of development restrictions, including height limitations, building orientation, and setback requirements. There is an existing connector trail, shown on this slide with the red line, between the eastern street end of Marina Drive and the nearby western street end of Braemar Drive to the east. This trail does not provide access to the beach, but does provide a pedestrian connection between two neighborhood streets. The appellants contend that construction of the residence on the subject site will impact public views of the ocean as seen from the portion of Marina Drive fronting this property. The appellants also contend that the approved residence is inconsistent with the character of the neighborhood because it is larger than the majority of the neighboring existing residences in this area. The residence is a one-story structure, 5,390 square feet in size, with a 574 square foot detached garage. The appellants specifically contend that the residence exceeds the maximum allowable floor to lot area ratio for the property by 6% or 300 square feet, pursuant to the city's updated single-family residence guidelines and the city's neighborhood preservation ordinance. In its approval of the project, the city found that the floor to lot area ratio formula is only applicable for lots under 15,000 square foot in size, and therefore did not apply to this property. However, more importantly, staff would note that neither the city's updated single-family residence guidelines nor the city's neighborhood preservation ordinance are part of the city's certified LCP, and that therefore these guidelines do not serve as a standard of review for the approval of a coastal development permit in this matter. Further, in its approval of the project, the city specifically reviewed the sizes of the 20 closest neighboring residences and found that the sizes of these structures range between 1,350 square feet up to 6,511 square feet, and that therefore the proposed 5,390 square foot residence was within the range of sizes for nearby existing residences, and that the structure was consistent with the neighborhood character. Commission staff agrees with the city's findings that although the residence is certainly within the higher end of the range of sizes for this area, it is still substantially consistent with the scale and size of surrounding development and does not raise a substantial issue in regards to the project's consistency with the LCP. In its approval of the project, the city required, as a condition of approval, that the applicant provide and maintain a 30-foot wide public view corridor, shown here along the eastern side of the property. This view corridor reaches from Marina Drive on the upslope portion of the property to Cliff Drive at the downslope portion of the property. The view corridor condition requires that all landscaping and walls within the designated view corridor be limited in height, adequate to preserve ocean views from Marina Drive, subject to the review and approval of final plans by the city's single-family design board. The appellants contend that the view corridor condition required by the city is not adequate to protect public views because, although the city required review and approval of final plans to ensure the vegetation within the view corridor would be low-lying, the condition does not specifically limit landscaping walls to a specific height above grade. However, as discussed in the addendum for this item, since the city's action on this coastal permit, the city's single-family design board has since completed its preliminary approval of the architecture and landscaping plans pursuant to the conditions of this coastal permit and has specifically limited the height of landscaping within the view corridor to no more than 3 to 4 feet in height for the upslope portion of the property and 5 to 6 feet for the southern or downslope portion of the view corridor. The city found that because slopes on site descend approximately 10 feet in elevation from Marina Drive to Cliff Drive, taller vegetation may be allowed on the downslope portion of the property. As approved by the city's single-family design board, final landscape plan cross-sections must still be submitted to the city by the applicant to ensure that blue water views from Marina Drive are maintained within the view corridor. Thus, as conditioned by the city, staff believes the view corridor on site will be adequate to protect public views. In addition, some of the appellants also contend that the view corridor should be a minimum of 40 feet in width rather than 30. The subject property is 155 feet in width where it fronts Marina Drive. The required 30-foot wide view corridor constitutes close to 20% of the overall width of the property. Although the city's LCP provides for the use of view corridors to mitigate impacts to public views, it does not include guidance or specific requirements regarding a minimum size for view corridors. Thus, in this case, there is not a clear basis for acquiring a larger view corridor than has been required by the city, nor has any evidence been submitted that the required 30-foot view corridor is not adequate to maintain public views consistent with the policies of the LCP. In closing, staff believes the city's decision regarding this permit application was correct, and therefore staff is recommending that the commission find no substantial issue exists in this case with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed. The motion for no substantial issue is found on pages 5 and 6 of your staff reports. This concludes the staff presentation.
All right, thank you, staff. We'll open the public hearing and see if the commissioners have any ex parte communications. Commissioner Hueso? You don't. Okay, thank you. Anyone else have a... Commissioner Secord.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My family home is 900 feet east of this project. I've lived there 40 years. I've walked this project. I'm very familiar with it. I have no financial interest in it. I don't know the developer. Some of the appellants are acquaintances. I went over this project with a member of the Santa Barbara Planning Commission who... saw it and looked over the view corridor and the terms and conditions of the project.
All right, thank you. See, it looks like we have three of the appellants here, Kitch Wilson, Ronald Green, and Michael Moore. And then Mr. Higman, you're speaking on your own behalf, I guess, speaking on behalf of yourself. So we'll start with the appellants. And who's going to go first? How much time do the appellants need?
I think it'll be quick. I don't have a...
Should we give 10 minutes for the side? Would that be enough?
That'll be fine for me.
All right, thank you.
Hello, my name is Kitch Wilson. Commissioners, I'm glad to be here. I'm concerned about this project for a couple of reasons. I read the staff report that you've been working based on, and one of the issues that came up in there is that there's a statement in there that Marina Drive is not considered a view area by the city. That was very surprising to me. In all the meetings I've had with the city, it was accepted that it was a view area because the permit for the equestrian trail included Marina along its pathway as the equestrian trail extension. There was never a strong statement made by the city in any of their reports that this was a view area. But because it was so generally accepted that it was, but you will find, and I sent this information to the staff, but they misread my information. If you will look on the memorandum from the city of Santa Barbara on April 13, not the staff report, but the memorandum, on the second page, the third dot, it says a trail easement establishes a public viewpoint along Marina Drive. So it is accepted by the city that the entire street is a public view. It has been a equestrian trail for as long as I've lived in the area, which is some 26 years. A testament to that are the large horse feces piles along both sides of the roads leading to and from it. It's very active. There's a lot of hikers and walkers in that area, and they all go along Marina Drive, and they all go along Bryn Mawr, and it's the way you get from the area, that one area to the other, without having to go through Cliff Drive, which is very busy. So it is definitely a public easement. The issue of the view corridor is another indication that it is that. That's why they want a view corridor on the property, in order to maintain the views. The issues that we have is, although it is a downsloping lot, so also is the view to the ocean downsloping. So if you allow higher vegetation on the far end, you are still blocking the ocean views, because the ocean view is actually along the grade, and it's not suddenly up some. So, and then the last meeting we had with the single family residents, they were going to allow citrus trees in the view corridor, which citrus trees, even though they may be dwarf citrus trees, are large. They're 10 feet across, 10 feet high, very dense, and they block the views from that area. So there is some concern that as you go, we went up to the city council, and then we're going back down to the city to the family meetings, that the requirements become looser as you go down. So they left it to the single family residence groups to decide on the height, but now it seems to be falling apart. So I really need to have the clear indication that it is a view corridor, that structures in that area have to be maintained low. There are structures in that area having to do with the swimming pool that are certainly above grade, certainly above grade. The size of the house is substantial. It's number 19 out of 20, 20 being the house next door, which is some 6,000 square feet. When we go to the city and we talk about the areas, they point to this house and they said the 6,000 one, they say, how did this get passed? Because it is so out of character that they generally say, well, we're going to consider the neighborhood, ignoring that structure because it's obviously a mistake. So using it as an example of compatibility is not consistent with the city. And this is number 19 out of 20. It's probably number 19 out of 19. It is a big house. It straddles the area. There was no concern initially for public views. It wasn't until the neighborhood started to object to it that changes were made, many of them very cosmetic, and it is still a very big house, and I think it's the wrong size. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Ronald Green. Good morning.
Morning. Thank you, Commission. I would just like to point out a couple of things. We went over the staff report, and basically it contained multiple errors, inaccuracies, and omissions. Time did not permit us to correct every one of them. We submitted some items for inclusion in the addenda. This was partially corrected, but not completely. The conclusions of the staff report were based on information prior to the addenda, and therefore, in our opinion, the conclusions are to be challenged. Basically, the other problem we have with this project is the city of Santa Barbara, for whatever reason, in recent years has chosen not to enforce their own local coastal plan policies. Specifically, local coastal plan policy 5.3 and local coastal plan policy 9.1, which have been described previously. Local coastal plan policy 5.3 again states the new development in and or adjacent to existing residential neighborhoods must be compatible in terms of scale, size, and design with the prevailing character of the established neighborhood. A reasonable person would conclude that that means the prevailing character of the entire established neighborhood, not just the one biggest house in the established neighborhood. The other thing is that what is the purpose of this local coastal plan policy? And this is the city of Santa Barbara's own local coastal plan policy. If they don't plan to enforce it, they can easily change it. However, it's on their website, and the public expects this policy to be enforced, not, as seems to be the case recently, evaded. What is the neighborhood? According to the City of Santa Barbara website, the neighborhood is the 20 closest homes. This means that the new developments must be compatible in terms of scale, and compatible in terms of size, and compatible in terms of design with the established neighborhood. Now, how do we compare the established neighborhood in terms of size? Well, according to the City of Santa Barbara's website, the standard for size comparison is what they call the floor area ratio, or FAR. This is the ratio of the size of the house to the size of the lot. This is used instead of absolute house size because the theory is that a big house on a big lot is more compatible with the neighborhood than the same house on a small lot. This is the standard of the city of Santa Barbara. as appears as a matter of public record and appears on the website, and the public sees this and expects it to be implemented and enforced. According to figures supplied to us by the City of Santa Barbara, which were included in the staff report in a chart toward the end, according to their own standard, the FAR, this house is incompatible with 19 out of the 20 closest homes. It's only compatible with one close home, which is the biggest. Any reasonable person, I think, would assume that a house incompatible with 19 of the 20 closest homes is not in compliance with Santa Barbara Local Coastal Plan Policy 5.3, which states it should be compatible with the prevailing neighborhood and not compatible with simply the biggest house in the neighborhood. So therefore, we think there is a reasonable question that this project does not comply with Santa Barbara's own Local Coastal Plan Policy 5.3, and that this permit should be denied. Now, Local Coastal Plan
Policy... Just a couple of minutes left on the time to speak. I didn't know if you wanted to save some for Mr. Moore.
Okay.
But it's up to you.
Okay, well, let me just say that it also, in our opinion, violates 9.1. The 3400 block has a clear ocean view. We've been supplied with a picture of it. It's greater than the length of half a football field, and we find that this 30-foot view corridor is insufficient. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Michael Moore?
You didn't know it was... we thought it was 10 minutes for each, so...
Oh,
I better hurry out.
10 minutes aside.
Looks like
sorry.
The clicker is gone for to pull up our my slides. We can...
Did you have a PowerPoint?
Not a PowerPoint, just a couple.
Just some. All right. We can extend him to 3 minutes. 3 minutes, I think, because they didn't understand. I wasn't clear.
Right. Want to go back? Yes, you go. It's not working on backwards. Does it won't go backwards? Only goes forward.
What do you want to do?
Well, I just
start there.
All right.
All right.
Good morning. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Ditto on what the previous neighbors had said. I would.
Could you give your name for the record,
please? I'm Michael Moore.
Thank you.
Michael Moore. The other Michael Moore. I know you wanted the other guy, but in looking at the coastal the mission statement of the Coastal Commission to protect, conserve, restore, enhance the environment and the human-based resources of the California coast and ocean for the environmental, sustainable, and prudent use of current and future generations. That's what this is about. Established back, obviously, in 1972. In policy 5.3. I really need some clarification by the commission in regards to how you define compatible and how you define prevailing. I wasn't able to find this in the Coastal Act. As you can see, the house on the left, where the lot size, the current project is proposed with that little white trailer in there, is huge compared to the houses going up. It's very large, and the project is pretty much going gunnel to gunnel. He's got that 30-foot side, but what they've done is they're taking the full width of these lots, and it just is not characteristic of our neighborhood with the average of about a 3,300 square foot home. I think I disagree with your staff's report. They're using I think, phrases and words loosely when it comes to citing what the city has said, such on page 12. While this is toward the upper end of the range, they're talking about it's the general trend. I do not think it's the general trend with our economy the way it is, with the natural resources that we have available, the water resources that we have available, and the fact that, as you can see, the slope and that this is a septic system area. You've got a lot of groundwater that comes down right into the ocean. It's very close. And so we take precedent in that. As far as looking into the foreseeable future, I don't think that these homes in this area will gain in size such as this. So we definitely need, in regards to policy 9.1, to protect and preserve and enhance with regards to the view corridors that's been brought up. I don't want to belabor that, but I definitely take conditions with the city's LCP. I feel that they're not following it. And I disagree with the city's findings with regards to the future and the foreseeable future that the homes will increase in size. And I think that the staff's conclusion is not in the best interest of our California coast. And that's really where I'm coming from, because this will set precedent for, I think, a lot of other areas. This is a very unique site. There's not that many open properties on the California coast that are like this one, and I think that that this permit should be really, really evaluated further for all the conditions that are involved in this neighborhood, especially in this coastal zone in California.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Moore. Let me just check to see, are there any applicants or applicant representatives in the audience? We don't have any speaker slips. I have one other speaker slip who says they're in opposition, but I'm just checking to see if there's no representative from the applicants. You are a representative? And what's your name, sir?
Michael Sullivan.
Okay, you need to fill out a slip for us when you get a chance, but you just come on up to the microphone now and we'll give you... How much time would you like?
Very quick.
Three minutes enough?
Yeah, that'll be fine.
All right, great.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Commission, and also I'd like to welcome the class as well that's here to see the process. And that's the only thing I'd like to quickly say is...
Just state your name for the record, too.
Michael Silva.
Thank you.
And the process is actually, just quickly, we'd like to say that this project has gone through a major process. It's been poked, prodded, cut, and... really looked at every level and appealed at every level at the city of Santa Barbara. And again, with the appeal process here, which is encouraged, and the staff, I think, has seen what has conspired throughout the whole process. It's been a very good process, difficult one, but I think at the end of the day, you end up with a project that is very acceptable. Two points I want to quickly make is it is about four. There is a list of, and we don't have it, I wasn't really prepared to speak to the commission today, but there's a list of the 20, and we are, when you talk about the FAR, Florida Area Ratio, we're number four on the list. We're not the top. And secondly, when you look at the site view, which nobody's really pointed out to you, I think when you look at the site view, there's Marina Drive, which everybody's talking about, and then there's Cliff Drive. Our property goes to the middle of Cliff Drive. And when you issued this coastal development permit originally for it to be an approved house residential lot, which is, it already carries a coastal development permit for a residential house to go on, we gave, I don't know what the footage is, up on the front side on Cliff Drive, which is a view area. It's a parking area, view area, that has been given off of our property on that front area, which is the whole parking view, which everybody goes and watches sunsets at. And so I just want to say I really think that the staff has done a good job with that review, and I appreciate your time.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for your input. And we have one other speaker, James Higman. Morning, Mr. Higman. How much time would you like?
5 minutes.
Okay, let's give Mr. Higman 5 minutes. Could you state your name for the record?
Jim Higman, 3408 Cliff Drive. honorable commissioners. I've lived at the same house for up to going on 54 years, and my property abuts the equestrian trail, which is used by not only horsemen, bicyclists, hikers, and walkers. And I share the driveway with what the media calls John Edwards' love baby. And that house where the love baby is living also abuts the equestrian trail. And when I moved there, I was familiar with the history of Santa Barbara. And back over 100 years, Cliff Drive was considered a scenic drive. And it was advertised by the Chamber of Commerce and the Santa Barbara City as a preferential route to see the ocean. And nowadays it's considered the still a scenic drive, Cliff Drive, as it comes to the kind of cliffside where the city has provided a room to park for automobiles, and most of the time there are automobiles there looking out at the ocean and the islands. It's one of the few places in the city that you can have uninterrupted views. My concern is that the about the planting, it's very fertile ground, and the trees that are planted with the landscape design, they should consider the that the fact that they'll grow very high. There should be some limit on the height of the final elevation that they'll grow.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And that's the end of our speakers, so we'll close the public hearing and go back to the staff.
Thank you, Commissioners. I would like to address a few of those comments. Staff would note that the residence approved by the city is large, but it is within the range of sizes for the neighboring development. And in response to Mr. Wilson's statement that staff did not consider Marina Drive to be an area of public views, I would mention that staff did note in the staff report that public views were important for Marina Drive, but there is no notation or reference in the city's LCP that Marina Drive is an area of particular importance in regards to public views. I would note that in this area, the primary public view is from Cliff Drive, which is the first public road between the sea. First public road paralleling the sea, and that is the road that is on the downslope portion of this property. So from Cliff Drive, views will not be impacted by this project as the entire property is on the landward side of that road. In regards to Marina Drive, staff did note that there is a small connector trail which links the terminus of Marina Drive to Braemar Drive, the adjacent street. There's no information in the LCP regarding a trail system or a trail easement in this area. However, staff notes that regardless, views were considered and protected through the conditions that the city placed on this permit. And to that end, views specifically along Marina Drive in front of this residence were considered to be protected by the city pursuant to that view corridor. In regards to the size of the residence, one of the other appellants had mentioned that this residence is not consistent with the Florida area ratio formula, or the FAR, which is on the city's website. And I would just mention again that the floor area ratio formula is not part of the certified LCP. It may be one tool, and it may be a valid tool in some circumstances for limiting the sizes of residences, but the city has not submitted that to the commission for review or for approval. And at this point in time, it is not a standard of review in a coastal development permit decision.
So it exists in the non-coastal areas of the county, but not in the coastal zone?
That's correct. It would be appropriate for the city to use that formula outside of the coastal zone. It's my understanding that they may be using that as guidance within the coastal zone, but it is not a standard of review.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. That ends staff's comments.
All right. We'll bring it back to commission for consideration. Commissioner Secord.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is kind of a tough one because these folks on the appellant side are my neighbors and acquaintances. And as I said, I've lived across from this property for virtually 40 years. I've gone over the staff report. I've looked at the view corridor. I think you can trust me that I will be paying very close attention to the height of the vegetation in that view corridor. And the city has limited it to 3 feet, and we'll stick to that. The project is a big house on a big lot, and that's what it is. And there's a considerable view corridor. There's a 25-foot setback on the other side of the property. The lots have been slow to develop there for some reason, and I just feel that the staff recommendation of no substantial issue is sustainable. The project was reviewed by the Architectural Board of Review on several occasions and was appealed to the Planning Commission, appealed to the City Council, and now it's here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Schellenberger?
Yeah, I'm going to speak specifically to the size of the house. The LCP policy says new development in and or adjacent to the existing residential neighborhoods must be compatible in terms of scale, size, design with the prevailing character of the established neighborhood. It doesn't say within the range of size, which is how our staff has interpreted it. If it's the second largest house, it is within the range of size, but it is not compatible with the prevailing character of the established neighborhood.
Put your mic on, Mary.
Oh. Okay, but I'm not starting over. Then going down to the county's interpretation, what our staff report says, the city said, while this is toward the upper end of the range, it follows the general trend that newer houses are larger than those houses decades ago. In the future, as existing properties change ownership and are altered or replaced, it is foreseeable that the average house size in this neighborhood will increase. Now, it strikes me that that is inconsistent with their policy. Their policy isn't that we shall allow the existing trend of ever-increasing house sizes to exist. Commissioner Kinsey and I have talked about this before. When you look at compatible to the neighborhood, compatible to the neighborhood when it was, 30 years ago, when Mr. Higman first bought, when compatible to now, compatible to the trend that's going forward. And this is something we very seldom face head on this commission, but I think we really should. If you accept that compatible is the same thing as within the existing range, we are really committing in many neighborhoods to an ever-increasing size of the house. And so I do find this inconsistent with their policy. I think their interpretation that, oh, well, houses are going to keep getting bigger and that's okay. It isn't just about the size of the house. It's the carbon footprint of the house. It's the energy use of the house. Maybe in the absence of land use, planning and control, houses will continue to increase. But I think that's part of what we're here to try
and look at the bigger issues. And I look forward to the day when we're actually able to calculate carbon footprint of new development like this. But I find it inconsistent. I think Mr. Higman's testimony was very compelling about what is the character of this neighborhood. The character of this neighborhood is not an ever-increasing size of the house. So I would urge my commissioners to find a substantial issue here. All right. Commissioner Weitzel?
Thank you. And I just want to reflect on a conversation that that's ongoing statewide in regards to what is consistent with neighborhood character. And a lot of people are arguing that even if a community plan does allow for an increase in density, that increase in density is not consistent with neighborhood character, and that we've even had state policies be enacted by the legislature and approved by the governor encouraging local jurisdictions to increase density, and local jurisdictions are fighting it because of the constituency. And it's a very, very difficult process, and people generally that have lived in a neighborhood for a very long time don't want to see change, and unfortunately it's just a part of change of the natural dynamic that happens in our country. And you know, we do have population increase, and we have a lot of things that are happening that are forcing change on neighborhoods. In this instance, I think we're not necessarily evaluating this project, you know, without really looking at the plan itself. We have to look at what allows this to happen. And the LCP is something that's been approved by the commission, approved by the local agency. It's gone through a rigorous planning process, and it's the law. And if we don't agree with it, and if we disagree that it's bad for Santa Barbara at this juncture, I think that's not really paying respects to the fact that we have a law in the books, and we have the local jurisdiction and the applicant that have respected those laws in planning this property. We do have other properties that are much larger. This is not necessarily the largest. And while, you know, you may have some specific reservations about whether it conforms, I mean, the policies in the area are clear. I think the staff has done a very, very good job of evaluating those policies measuring this project up against those policies, and I think it's consistent, and I think there have been some concessions made by the property owner to allow for public views and for scaling back to size of the project, although they have considerable discretion to improve the size of the project. So I think there have been some compromises made, and in the spirit of compromise and trying to reach the best project design for this area, I think it's been done. And I think we need to reserve this conversation for the future LCP that may come in the future, and we need to look at how we can create balance in neighborhoods. And I don't necessarily believe that all homes should look alike and be the same size and have the same design. I personally think that variety is good, and creativity is good, and expression through architecture is a reflection of people's values. And I think that's a good thing for neighborhoods to have, you know, diversity in design. And we are kind of slightly changing the dynamic, and that in this neighborhood, it's not necessarily a bad thing. And I think it's going to do a lot to make this neighborhood interesting and livable, and give it a range of ownership. And that's what we need all across the state. We need balanced communities, and anything we can do to promote balance and development would be good for each neighborhood.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Weisel. Commissioner Schallenberger?
I just wanted to respond because I think perhaps Commissioner Weisel misunderstood what I was trying to say. I strongly support the LCP policy. I'm not suggesting in any way that I disagree with the policy. I'm suggesting that this project is inconsistent with it. And I strongly support diversity in neighborhoods.
What I don't believe diversity means is an ever-increasing size of homes, which is how the city seems to have interpreted their own policy of being compatible. So I entirely agree with you that we, that is the standard of review here, and that's the standard that I'm using, and the standard that I believe this project is inconsistent with.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Burke?
Maybe Commissioner Schallenberger can help me here. She was critical of this project as it relates to its carbon footprint, even though in one breath she said that, in the next breath she said she didn't know how to measure carbon footprint. Now, in the illustration, I saw an array of solar panels for this project. So I'm not sure that this house has a negative carbon footprint, and I just wondered how you got to that assessment.
It is accurate that I don't know how to measure it, and that's a quantifiable number. As a general rule, that's why I said I look forward to when we can. I don't know that it is either. As a general rule, the larger development is, the bigger the carbon footprint. But we can't measure that yet, so I look forward to when we can.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Potter?
Madam Chair, I move the Commission determine appeal number A-4-SBC-08-063 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Section 30603 of the Coastal Act, and recommend a yes vote. If I get a second, I'll speak to it briefly.
Right. Who is the seconder? Thank you. We have a motion by Commissioner Potter, a second by Commissioner Hueso. Passage of the motion will result in the finding of no substantial issue and adoption of the resolution and findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Potter?
Just briefly, I believe that there have been significant changes made to this project, and it has had rather a tortured past as it went through the local process. It was the height of the building was reduced by almost a foot. The front yard wall was reduced from 6 feet to 2. There's elimination of the front entry. There's a 40-foot view corridor provided. The house was reduced by 828 feet, and the one-car garage and the two-car garage were combined to create one. So I think it has had significant modifications to get it down to what will probably never be completely acceptable, but is probably a modest improvement. And I just going to Mr. Hueso's debate with Commissioner Schallenberger, you know, in most cases, I think the compatibility issue is rather subjective. There are some glaring examples of incompatibility in my mind, but quite often compatibility is simply in the eye of the beholder. And so for that reason, I think that this is compatible, and for that reason, I recommend a yes vote.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Hueso?
Yes, and I just want to agree with Commissioner Schallenberger that this perception that there's a future trend to increase housing size is the future trend, I think, is not the standard. And in approving this home, I'm not acknowledging that that's a standard, but I don't necessarily feel that we should punish this applicant in particular, because there is this general feeling that this is a future trend, and I think we need to state that is not a standard, that this is not a precedent, and that issue should be addressed in future LCPs. Now, knowing what we know in terms of the general view of local agencies in regards to the future evolution of these communities, we should take that in mind in the approval of future LCPs.
All right, thank you. And Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. Very briefly, I will be supporting the motion, but I want to, more importantly, support Commissioner Schallenberger's view. I don't think it's the problem with the applicant here today. I do think it is a problem with the community standards that are being developed that ignore the luxury of living on the coast and allow for this ever-increasing sense that in order to capture the value of that, one has to increase their home size. And I think we should, as a commission, whenever we have an opportunity, really visit the idea that the privilege of living in these coastal areas doesn't require ever-increasing home size. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other speakers? We have a motion and a second. The maker and the seconder are recommending a yes vote. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call? Oh, there is. I'm sorry. Could we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Burke?
Yes.
Commissioner Hueso?
Yes.
Commissioner Secord?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Kinsey?
Yes.
Commissioner Schellenberger?
No.
Commissioner Ashajian?
Aye.
Vice Chair Neely?
Yes. Oh.
Commissioner Potter?
I think I made the motion, but I probably should vote on it.
Commissioner Potter?
Okay, and the vote was?
8-1.
8-1. And the motion is approved. The commission hereby finds that appeal number A-4-SBC-08-063 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Section 30603 of the Coastal Act.
Yes, Madam Chair, just relative to the whole issue of green building standards, this commission, when you adopted the new fee schedule, did adopt a provision that if a house meets the standards, the LEED standards, and their gradations of that, the fee is waived. We are also looking at carbon footprint measurements that are used by other entities, and we will be briefing you at the December meeting on where we are. As you know, we have looked at greenhouse gas emissions for major projects, such as the toll road and the LNG project, but we have not ventured into the single-family home realm. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we're going to do that, but at least we've encouraged use of those standards by the fee schedule that you've adopted. But we'll be talking about what we're doing in a range of areas at the December meeting.
Madam All right, Chairman. Thank you. Yes, Commissioner Burke.
In conjunction with that, contrary to Commissioner Schellenberger's popular conceived notion that houses continue to expand because of wealth, there was a very interesting article in The Economist about 2 months ago which said with the aging population of wealth that the number of people in a family is decreased, so that people are opting for more opulent but smaller homes than in the past. So I think that there is going to be a change, and I think that because of the age shift in the world, not in America alone, but in the world, that we're going to be looking at smaller houses and not larger houses.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Burke. Commissioner Secor?
A question for staff with respect to LEED standards for residential properties. I know there are LEED standards exist for commercial buildings, and I knew there was some talk about LEED for single-family homes. What's the state of LEED standards for residential property?
I can't give you that, but there are some, and we are looking at it, and we are encouraging architects and designers to meet those and build those into their designs of single-family homes, and that's happening.
And thus, you'll reduce the fee to zero under what precise circumstance?
I don't remember what the criteria are, but I can get you that information.
That would be very cool. I mean, the carrot, I like carrots. Yeah. And if you can say, if you'll put in solar panels and hot water heating and gray water, da-da-da-da-da-da, and insulation and double panel glass, we'll do your CDP for nothing.
But didn't you mention LEED standards?
Pardon me?
Didn't you mention LEED standards in particular? Yeah. And those are very defined.
Those are very defined.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Just Commissioner Kinsey?
We'll get you that information.
Appreciate it.
Briefly, to this topic, and my fellow commissioners, County Marin has adopted ordinance that requires that all homes greater than 3,500 square feet meet the energy requirements and the other standards of a 3,500 square foot home, so that as you build larger, you have to incorporate more green building features into the project in order that the net impact of the project is no greater than that of a 3,500 square foot home, and it may be something worth considering as we go forward. Thank you.
All right, excellent. All right. Thank you.
I have one last item, Madam Chair, and that's the contract or the interagency agreement with the Department of Boating and Waterways. That was a late addition to the agenda, and it's just to it's 2.5A, mm-hmm. and we asked for your approval to add $50,000 for the extension of the time frame of the agreement with the Department of Boating and Waterways for the Green Boating Program.
Ready for the motion?
All right, we have a...
I move that the commission authorize the executive director to amend an interagency agreement with the California Department of Boating and Waterways to accept an additional $50,000 for phase, $50,000 for phase 7 of the boating clean and green campaign.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the... or authorize the executive director to amend the interagency agreement with the California Department of Boating and Waterways and accept the additional $50,000. Is there any discussion on this item? Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote? Seeing none, the amendment is approved.
Yes, and Madam Chair, just two final points. One is to, again, let everybody know, I mentioned this late last night, that we are, we have launched a whale tail replacement image contest. So we will be the public will be seeing a variety of submittals, and the sign up, the rules of the contest are out on the table in front of the meeting room and on our website.
Okay.
The final thing I just want to call to your attention, I'll send you these. This is an article on the toll road. I found it interesting that they've applied for a federal loan of $1.1 billion, because apparently the projections for tolls are not meeting their expectations. I find it very interesting, and it obviously will affect the toll road that we just dealt with. So I'll send you that article.
Thank you. I want to say once again thank you to the class for visiting us today. If any of the commissioners or staff have a few minutes to stay after, if you have questions, some of us can do that. So thank you for visiting with us, and we hope you'll come back and attend other meetings. And thank you to the Channel Islands Harbor District for and the county for accommodating us here.